have nearly 150,000 kids carrying guns for these war zones we call public schools. In the 40s and 50s, student problems were chewing gum and talking. In the 90s, rape and murder were the trend. The only way this nation can even hope to last this decade is put God in America. Abraham said the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. So when you eliminate the word of God from the classroom in politics, you eliminate the nation that word protects. America is now number one in teen pregnancy and violent crime, number one in illiteracy, drug use, and divorce. Every day in the Holocaust, 5,000 unborn die. Pornography floods our streets. America's dead and dying hand is on the threshold of the church, while the spirit of Sodom and Gomorrah vexes us all. When it gets to the point where people would rather come out of the closet than clean it, it's the sign that judgment of God is going to fall. If there's ever been a time to rise up, church, it's now. And as the blood-bought saints of the living God proclaim, it's time to sound the alarm from the church house to the White House and say, we want God in America again.
George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Samuel Adams, First Chief Justice John Jay, names synonymous with the spirit of our country, founding fathers of the USA. Over 200 years ago, they shook off the chains of tyranny from Great Britain by divine call. Citing 27 biblical violations, they wrote the Declaration of Independence with liberty and justice for all. But something happened since Jefferson called the Bible the cornerstone for American liberty that put it in our schools as a light. Or since give me liberty or give me death.
Oh, beautiful Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we always welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls because this is going to be a fascinating two-hour program. With us on the line is David Carrico. We're going to be talking about the Egyptian Masonic Satanic Connection. And I will tell you, this is going to be a very outspoken program. It'll cover a lot of things that may be very shocking and frightening to you. But in times like this, we have to address the real issue that we're at stake. Now, we're talking about going to war with Iraq. Whether you support the war or whether you don't support the war, isn't it interesting that just immediately before the war is about to begin, and it's about to begin, why the President of the United States and his administration has suddenly announced the color coding has gone from yellow to orange. A stake that suddenly America may be under attack soon. Now, is Saddam Hussein going to attack us? Nobody suggested that. Supposedly, just before we're going to go to war with Iraq, Al-Qaeda is talking about attacking us, Al-Qaeda being the organization of the wicked Osama bin Laden. Is this true? Are we being manipulated? Are they playing games with our minds? And out of fear, as people are told, now, you know, we're maybe attacked at any time, you know, biological or chemical attack, but we don't want you to worry about this. Oh, no, you're not to worry about it. You just go about your life as we ordinarily will. We're going to have a psychologist or psychiatrist come on and talk about it. I heard this on CBS this afternoon. They had a psychiatrist saying, don't worry. I mean, worry is the worst thing that you can do. I mean, if you worry, why, you're just going to be concerned all the time. And, of course, what we do is we're going to talk about this so you won't worry and you won't be frightened, because being frightened just leads to worry. And I'm listening and I'm saying, boy, are they brainwashing the American people. And they really are brainwashing the American people. And that's the great tragedy. We're going to have to go ahead and we just had a problem here. My producer got the wrong guest on the line, so we're going to be here in just a moment with hopefully with the right guest. Do we have David Carrico on the line?
Hello? No, I'm sorry.
Is it David? Hello. This is not Beverly, is it?
No, this is Beverly.
Well, why do we have you on the line?
I'm not sure.
Well, I'm sorry. We're going to have to get you off the line, and we're going to have to get David Carrico on the line. I apologize for that, but I can't fire the producer. She's one of my best friends. God bless you. Have a good evening,
you
Beverly.
Too. I enjoyed it this morning.
Thank you, and I did too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, we've got David Carrico on the line, and we'll switch him over to the correct line a little bit later. In fact, I think we'll switch him over just about right now. I'm going to let you put David on the right line. We'll be back in just a moment here with more Radio Liberty. All right. Well, we seem to be having some technical problems this evening for some strange reason. So we'll be with you very, very, very shortly. But anyway, this evening our guest is to be David Carrico, and we're going to be talking about what is happening here as far as the spiritual battle that we're seeing enacted before us, because I personally believe this whole movement towards the war in the Middle East has been scripted and planned for a long period of time. It began back in 1965 when we, of course, repealed the McCarran Immigration Act and began to convert America into a multicultural society in 1979 when administration of Jimmy Carter, directed by Zbigniew Brzezinski, the man who created the Trilateral Commission, whose emblem just happened to be three sixes. Of course, he worked for David Rockefeller, so what would you expect? And, of course, Brzezinski, of course, helped to support Saddam Hussein when he came to power, did topple the Shah, brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power, began financing the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, which precipitated the Afghan War, which led to Osama bin Laden's prominence and eventually to the formation of Al-Qaeda. And there was a fourth event that had to do with the murder of the president of Pakistan. Well, and then, of course, we go from there to continually financing Al-Qaeda and then financing the Taliban. And that's all covered in a book entitled Holy Wars by James Cooley, published in 1999, and then of the Al-Qaeda's being financed by Saudis and by the Pakistanis and by the CIA, and the Saudi Arabia is financing this whole incredible movement. And so what are we doing? Why we go to war with Afghanistan? Well, we finally got David Carrico on the line. Hi, David. How are you?
Dr. Stan, I'm fine, thank you.
Well, it's good to have you with us, and we're going to be talking this evening about your book, The Egyptian Masonic and Satanic Connection. So I'm going to let you sort of pick up and tell us a little bit about that, will you?
I would be glad to. And this is a book that has quite an interesting title, The Egyptian Masonic Satanic Connection.
Your voice is very... Are you on a regular telephone?
Are we not coming through okay?
No, you're coming very, very soft.
Okay. I don't know why.
You have a regular hardline telephone?
Yeah.
Are you on the hardline telephone?
Yes.
Well, you're not on a handset or portable?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Are we doing any okay now?
You're doing fine. Go ahead.
All righty. But this book was the result of personal experience that my wife and I had. And my wife was working with a support group. And it was basically a group that was trying to be a support group for children that were falling through the cracks of the system, children that had been abused, and were placed in foster homes and such things as that. And what we didn't know, and at the time, we didn't have even an idea that satanic ritual abuse existed, let alone to actually know what it was. But some of these children were actually being satanically and ritually abused. And when we began to deal with this, a bizarre set of events was set in place. And before it was all finished, there were eight children that had come forth that had all made the accusation that they had been taken out of the public school system. And these were middle school age children. And they all alleged that they were taken to a specific house here in Evansville, Indiana, and that they were having bizarre rituals performed on them. And they were making allegations that there were sexual acts and group sex things taking place at these rituals. And they were even talking about things like cannibalism, human sacrifice, drinking of blood, weird sex orgies. And the really bizarre thing about it, if that isn't bizarre enough, is that all of these children, and these children did not know each other, the families did not know each other, and they were all from different schools. And these children named two specific individuals in the school system.
Now, how did you find out about this? Were you just there at the time, or were you have any contact with these children?
Well, my wife was working with these children, and through this group. It was a group. It was called SLAM. It was an acronym group. It was called Society's League Against Molestation. And they were working to help these children, and these children began telling these stories. And Rick and Pam Doniger, who wrote a chapter in our book on satanic ritual abuse, they were also a member of this. And through this, these children began to come forward. And a lady that was the head of the psychology department at the local university, the University of Southern Indiana here in Evansville, and she interviewed these children and all eight of them, and she verified that they had been abused and that all of these children had been ritually marked. It looked as if, right above the elbow, it looked as if you would take a razor and you would make just a small cut, and then you would make another cut later on, and it was a very noticeable scar, but yet, you know, it just really didn't stand out. But all of these children were marked in this way, and this was verified by the head of the psychology department at the local university. And there was also a lot of things went on, like one child, as soon as she told her mother, she said that the principal had committed a sex act upon her in the principal's office. She took the child immediately to the hospital. The abuse was verified medically. But when it came time to begin to put a case together, and a fellow by the name of Bill Welburn became very involved in this, and Bill was the former prosecutor here in Evansville, and he became the advocate for all of these children to try to get prosecution. And when we began to try to put the case together and go back to the hospital, the record was gone, you know, and it was really bizarre. Strange things started happening like that, and we began to get real paranoid and think, well, you know, maybe everyone in Evansville is a Satanist, you know. But what we began to realize is that both men that were accused of these crimes by these children were Freemasons. The chief of police in Evansville was a Freemason. The investigator that was the head of the case investigating these two men was a Freemason. And we began to realize that there were some bizarre connections here.
And were you aware at the time that when you are a Freemason, you swear a blood oath that, you know, if a fellow Mason is accused of a crime, even of murder and treason, that you will protect him?
Yes, we were. And at the time, this was taking place in the late 80s, and we were just beginning our study of Freemasonry. At that time, I had done my first radio shows with Tom McKinney, and I had launched, I was probably about a year into my intense study on Freemasonry when this all hit. And the amazing thing that happened, in our book, The Egyptian Masonic Satanic Connection, we have over 80 drawings that these children and other children draw. And in this, what we began to see, and through the testimony of these children, is that there were bizarre similarities between the Masonic ritual and the ritual that was perpetuated in the Egyptian mystery religions. And
but, of course, most Masons would say that's absurd. You know, in fact, I know Masons who are good people, or at least appear to be good people, and you know, some of them even believe that they're Christians, go to Christian churches. Certainly, most Masons would not know anything about this sort of thing, would they?
No, they wouldn't. And as a matter of fact, my wife, right before we went on the air tonight, read me a couple emails, which could probably, we call them hate mails. And
must have known you were coming on tonight.
Yeah, we get these regularly. And, you know, a lot of these are probably well-intentioned, if you can have a well-intentioned hate mail. But, you know, from Masons that say, well, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, you're crazy. We're not like that. And we know a lot of Masons are not like that. But what we have heard, it was back, I guess, in about 1994 in St. Louis, Missouri, at a conference there when I first spoke publicly and made my case in public that there was a connection between satanic ritual abuse and secret societies. And since that time, with the book, and we've also done a video, we have had not just a few, but literally thousands of reports from people around the world that they have either been abused by Freemasons or that they have been abused with Masonic ritual or on Masonic Lodge property, often in very bizarre satanic ritualistic ways. And I'm not the type of person that I just believe everything I hear. But when I hear these multitudes of testimonies, I cannot dismiss them as just all the product of urban legend. And also, my wife has had some experiences that I'll not get into in a lot of detail, but people that want to go to our website, they can find out more about that. She's been victimized in abusive situations. But, you know, I just began to see the things we saw were just undeniable. And at that point, we even began to delve farther to try to see where these connections were coming from. And that's why we called our book The Egyptian Masonic Satanic Connection, because we literally began to see the Masonic ritual blend with this dark Egyptian lore and express itself in these modern satanic cults. And one of the chapters in our book, and you know, a lot of Masons, they say, well, gosh, you know, this just isn't how it is, but in reality, this is exactly how it is. And as anybody that studies Freemasonry to any extent at all quickly finds out that the concept of God in Freemasonry is Luciferian. And in that Luciferian concept of God, they really don't believe in a personal devil. And a lot of Satanists don't even believe in a personal devil. A lot of people don't believe that, but that's true. And within that Luciferian concept of God, as Eliphas Levi put it, the devil is just God being bad. So the Luciferian God is capable of acts of great kindness, of love and generosity and helping the poor and the afflicted. And he's also capable of things like torture, mutilation, mass murder, and genocide. And within that Luciferian concept, the extremes of good and the extremes of evil are both understood of the expression of that one God. And within that basic understanding of God, acts of abject horror can be justified if done for the right reasons.
Well, you know, I think that the problem that the average person, and even the average Mason, who is not a bad person, and has never been taken into the secret, really secret parts of Masonry, doesn't understand is that Masonry is a fraternity within a fraternity. And, of course, for the skeptic out there, the book would be Lectures in Ancient Philosophy by Manly P. Hall, who, when he died, was cited by the Scottish Rite magazine to be Masonry's greatest philosopher. And as Manly P. Hall said, Masonry is a fraternity within a fraternity, an outer fraternity made up of gregarious people doing good, but an inner fraternity of those who study the Arcanum and Canorum. And that is the secret and the secrets of secrets. And that's really what it's all about. And that's why you may know Masons and you say, gee, they're the nicest people in the world and they do good and they have Shriner hospitals. But there is an inner circle. There is an inner fraternity. And it is that inner fraternity that, of course, is involved in the truly satanic rites, the Aleister Crowleyan rites that are not imaginary. They're real. They're practiced today. We will talk a little bit more when we get back here about Crowleyism and about the satanic ritual abuse that his disciples carry out on people all across the world, indeed. All across America at this very time. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is David Carrico. We're talking about his book, The Egyptian Masonic Satanic Conspiracy. And if you hear this sort of thing, you say, oh, well, that isn't really going on in America today. Well, it's going on, and of course it's well known that it's going on. It's simply that the information is being suppressed from you. We have a woman who's been on our program many, many times, and I'm sure she wouldn't mind my repeating her story. In fact, we have a 4-tape set on Satanism and Deliverance, and she is in that along with her husband. But she came from a satanic family here in the United States. They started satanically abusing her when she was 3 years old, and this kept up for many, many, many years. And it took a long, long time before she had any idea what this was all about, because what they do is they create a disassociation. In other words, a multiple personality. They do this intentionally to conceal what's going on. And it took a long period of time and hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical bills before she finally found a psychologist who said, I can't help you, but I know a grass seed farmer up in Oregon who might be able to. And she went to see Marion Knox and eventually was delivered. And now, of course, she helps others, and she's actually helped several people I've talked to. And simply by counseling with them, these people have been part of this whole satanic world that most people don't know exist. And they don't know exist because the church refuses to talk about it. It doesn't know. It's afraid to talk about it, or, of course, it does know, and in some instances, why people within the church are part of this whole world satanic conspiracy. And this is the great tragedy of today, is the fact that most of our churches, if they do know about it, are afraid to speak out. Now, David, you know, certainly if anybody talks about this, they come under tremendous pressure, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. And one thing you do immediately, you ostracize yourself from the church. And what I've found is if you go into the church, you either have to shut up about this and not talk about it or just leave. And we have just not been able to shut up. So we have just done everything we have been able to do to try to inform people and help people in whatever way we can. And we've had to create that full format for ourselves and that forum through seminars and people like yourself, and just any way we can. And you were mentioning Manly P. Hall, and we have a very interesting quote on page 55 in our book. That's, you know, some of these quotes are just so cryptic. When you have someone the stature of Manly P. Hall that says something like this, he said in the Lost Keys, if the identity of the Osiris and Haramic myths be accepted, then the Book of the Dead is the open sesame of symbolic masonry, revealing a hidden beauty beneath the rituals and an unsuspected splendor in the symbols and a divine purpose actuating the whole of Masonic procedure.
Well, you know, you read that, and you read it through about the third time, and you say, what is he saying? And this is esoteric writing. It's written in such a way that you're not quite sure what he's saying until you stop and analyze it. And basically what he's saying is, if these are myths of Osiris and Isis are accurate, and of course he is acknowledging really that they are, then of course this is the key to understanding masonry. Now, of course, this is the whole basic idea, you know, that Osiris was a god, and Isis, of course, you know. Well, we'll be back in just a moment here. Isis, well, these are the basis of the pagan religions of today, and of phallic worship, because, of course, the sexual member was cut off of Osiris, and Isis found this, and of course, was able to have intimate relationships with it and create this sun, Horus. But of course, this then becomes the symbol, and you will see the phallic symbols all over the country. That's what the Washington Monument is. It's a Masonic phallic symbol. You'll see one in the courtyard of the Vatican there in front of St. Peter's Basilica. I'm sure that most Catholics and many of the people of the Catholic faith have no idea of its significance. But of course, everybody who's associated with the dark arts certainly does. this infiltrates every aspect of our society, and the fact that most people do not even know about the mystery religions or the traditions of the satanic worship it exists in the world today is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists of what the American people think.
Yes, and what is really so profound about this statement, in Chapter 6 of our book, some of the things, and like I said, we had over 80 drawings in our book that these children drew, and we directly coordinated these drawings with specific practices in the Egyptian Book of the Dead. Now, it appears like when people are in the occult, and they will use what we would call the programming manual. Timothy Leary, who was very big into mind control and programming, he used the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And he actually used this in the state of Massachusetts in the prison system back in the early 60s to do mind control experiments with LSD on the prisoners. Now, it appeared that these people were using the Egyptian Book of the Dead. Now, some of the things, and, you know, keeping in mind, why would Manly P. Hall say that the Egyptian Book of the Dead is the open sesame? Here's some of the things that the Egyptian Book of the Dead contains. The drinking of blood, cannibalism, torture, crushing people's bones, murder, cannibalism, dismemberment, burning people alive. I mean, it's just anything that is absolutely hideous, hacking in pieces, little babies. It's just unbelievable. I mean, people think about the mystery religions as some kind of a fluffy New Age interesting thing, but in the upper degrees of the mysteries, there were human sacrifice and torture and things that are just the epitome of darkness, the sacrifice of children unto Moloch that we read about right within the Bible. And when Freemasonry makes the claim that they are the continuation of, as Joseph Fort Newton put it, that they are continuing the ministry of the mystery religions, well, this is nothing nice and clean, but this is something very, very ugly and very, very dark.
And yet, of course, this is really only when you get out of the lower levels of Masonry and into the occult degrees of Masonry, which most Masons don't even know exist. Now, they ought to if they studied Masonry, if they studied the writings of Manly P. Hall, and Mackey and of Albert Pike, they would obviously know what this is about. But everything within the lower degrees of Masonry is aimed at deceiving the Masons. In fact, Albert Pike brags about that in his book. And, of course, the whole idea is the real secret is to be kept only for the princes of Masonry, the adepts and the princes of Masonry, I think was his terminology. But the average Mason ought to understand what it's about. He goes through all the rituals, but he never understands the real meaning, unless, of course, he begins to read and study. And then it becomes so apparent. Why, of course, this is the worship of Lucifer. But, of course, if the average person understood that, they'd get out of the lodge tomorrow. But they really don't, because nobody ever tells them.
Right. And this is the reason originally, all the way back with Nimrod, after Nimrod was killed for being so ungodly, they knew and understood that if they were going to continue doing the things they did, they couldn't do them openly. So this degree system, where the people in the lower degrees weren't aware of what's going on in the higher degrees, this was developed all the way back at Babylon so that in secret they can continue doing what they really desired to do without creating the public outcry. And this is what's done in Freemasonry. People that are joining the lodge for supposedly good reasons, they're providing a grassroots support system for unbelievable evil.
And of course, I think that the thing that you point out so well is quoting Masonic writings. Nimrod was the first. Nimrod was the first of the Masons, and everything can be tracked back to Nimrod himself. We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest, David Carrico. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and back here, our special guest this evening is David Carrico, and we're talking about his book entitled The Egyptian Masonic and Satanic Conspiracy. And to many people, they say, well, this thing couldn't really be going on. I mean, there are not satanic groups here in the United States that are kidnapping children and sacrificing some of them and submitting others to satanic ritual abuse. They're not secret covens across America. Well, you know, one of the interesting stories you start out your book with is the story of David Berkowitz and the son of Sam killings. Everybody's heard of those. You know, this fellow claimed that Sam, the dog, told him to kill these eight girls. But, of course, the true story has been totally suppressed. It's written in a book entitled The Ultimate Evil by Maury Terry, who we've actually interviewed. But you talk about that, and people, of course, although the book is there, it's certainly not going to be discussed by Barbara Walters or Dan Rather or the other representatives of this world system to tell you that David Berkowitz was only part of a satanic conspiracy. Would you like to tell that story, David?
Yes, and we actually have the pictures in our connection book, in our Christian Workers Handbook. But something that I noticed right away, when in the actual photographs of that were published about Berkowitz, and it showed one of the sigils that he was using to do his incantations. And I immediately recognized it as a sigil that was drawn by Eliphas Levi.
Now what? I'm sorry. What are you describing?
Well, this is a sigil is a drawing that is used as a point of an incantation to summon a demon.
Okay.
And it is a magical working. And you see, this isn't something that you would get from buying a satanic Bible of. Down at the local bookstore, but this is something that is a ritual magical working, and it comes from what I call this Masonic Satanism. And of course, Eliphas Levi, he drew the Baphomet, and Albert Pike and Helena Petrovna Blavatsky drew heavily upon Levi.
Now, for our listeners out there, the Baphomet is a picture of the devil. And, of course, he's the goat. He looks like a goat. If you ever see a picture of evil, it is in the Baphomet. And, of course, you'll find this in all satanic books. You'll find it reproduced in Manly P. Hall's books. You'll find it in many Masonic writings. And, of course, when you understand that this is really who they worship, the devil, evil, personified by the goat and the goat head. Why, then, of course, it all begins to make sense. But you notice somebody points it out to you, you could see it a dozen times and never understand how it all fits together.
Exactly. And, of course, this goes back to the Knights Templar. And it was the god originally worshipped by the Templars and Jacques de Molay, the first Grand Master of the Templars. And it's interesting that in 1810, when Napoleon, a Templar Mason, sacked the Vatican, and they went in and they extracted an invaluable amount of occult manuscripts that they had stored in the Vatican. And these were taken back to Paris, and one of the two men that were very high in the Knights Templar at the time that were given the job of studying and cataloging these manuscripts that came out of the Vatican, one of them was Eliphas Levi.
I see.
And from these pristine occult manuscripts, Levi put together a series of writings that are the creme de creme of the black magical workings. And it was one of these sigils that I immediately spotted in David Berkowitz. And of course, I'm not the only one, as you said. Maury Terry and the Ultimate Evil, he's made the connection between the Church of the Final Process and the OTO. The OTO being what I call Crowleyan Satanism, because they are dedicated to the propagation of the doctrine of Aleister Crowley in the Book of the Law, Do What Thou Wilt. And in our book, we have an entire chapter upon Aleister Crowley, showing his Egyptian connections. It was during his invocation of the Egyptian god Horus that he became possessed by a demon that he called Iwas. And this was the demon that channeled the magical workings through Crowley. And Crowley believed himself to be Eliphas Levi reincarnated. Very bizarrely, he was born the year that Eliphas Levi died. And then Timothy Leary believed himself to be Aleister Crowley reincarnated. So we just have this demonic anointing being passed down. But these things are so bizarre, and maybe we can help the listeners to understand how this can happen in a workings that are supported by men. They're so naive about it. And one good example is Scottish Rite Freemasonry. And we have a chapter in our book called Black Masonry. And what Black Masonry is degrees 18 through 30 in the Scottish Rite. And Black Masonry was dubbed that by the Co-Masons and the Theosophists, and we quote in our book specifically Charles Ledbetter, who shared the head of Theosophy with Annie Besant earlier in the 20th century. But he says that the degrees 19 through 30 in the Scottish Rite are totally devoted to evil. They're Black Masonry. And degrees 4 through 18 is called Red Masonry, which is devoted to the knowledge of good. And in the breakdown of the degrees in the Scottish Rite, we see the dualistic Luciferian concept of God manifested. Degrees 4 through 18 in Red Masonry, well, these are nice, fluffy, good things God does. And in degrees 19 through 30, this is Black Masonry, devoted to the knowledge of evil. And as an example, in the 30th degree, the Knight Kadash in the Scottish Rite, the ritual opens with the lodge room all draped in black and eerie music playing, and the person being initiated is in a coffin. And he has to come up out of the coffin with a dagger, and he has to stab three skulls. And these three skulls represent the king, the pope, and the man that originally was the informer that led to the arrest of Jacques de Molay. And in the original setting, that originated to the pope, the king of France, and the fellow that actually caused de Molay to be arrested and later burned as a Satanist and a heretic. But in modern Masonic philosophy, you see, this still plays out. And it represents any religious organization that would oppose the goals of Freemasonry, any government that would oppose the goals of Freemasonry, and any individual that would oppose the goals of Freemasonry. And of course, the idea being perpetuated is the end justifies the means, that in this Black Masonry, that there's no extent, murder or anything. And of course, the fellow that informed on Jacques de Molay, he was assassinated by the Templars. And these rituals are acting out the revenge motif to establish this Masonic agenda, which is expressed as Ordo ab Chaos.
But it is really the agenda of the ancient mystery religions, of which modern day Masonry is the present day manifestation of it, along
exactly.
with the Rosicrucians and the Theosophists. They're all modern day manifestations of the ancient mystery religions that began with Nimrod and were always there. They were the practice of the Magi in ancient times in Persia. And you remember at the time of the birth of Christ, why, of course, the Magi came to witness the birth of the Christ child. But you'll find this in the writings of Pythagoras, the writings of Plato. Certainly Aristotle was schooled in these mysteries, and he taught them to Alexander the Great. And, of course, it was the knowledge of the mysteries that allowed Alexander to be such a successful military leader, exactly as was the knowledge of the mysteries that allowed Napoleon to be such a successful military leader. And you will find this all throughout history. You'll only catch glimpses of it during the 1200s with the Knights Templar there in first in the Holy Land, and then of course their influence in Europe until Jacques de Molay is arrested on Friday, the 13th of October, 1307. And then, of course, the Rosicrucians come along in the 1400s, and the Masons come along in the 1700s. But always behind the scenes have been these secret societies. They've always been here, and they're manifest to this very day. And the fact that people don't know about them simply reflects the degree of control that exists over our thought process. Let's get back to David Berkowitz, because I think this is really such an important story. I mean, here there's 8 women are killed in New York. And, of course, eventually the story comes out. Berkowitz had killed a couple of them, but he was part of a satanic group. What was the name of the group?
The Church of the Final Process.
All right, fine. But, they had ties to Charles Manson. They had ties all across this country. But do you think that the police would go after this satanic group? And it was, of course, it was Sam who had several sons who carried out several of the other murders, the ones that Berkowitz didn't. But there was no way that the police were going to go after that. They had one man, just like we had Timothy McVeigh. We got rid of McVeigh. That was the end of the Oklahoma City bombing. No, McVeigh was simply a front for this whole thing. Berkowitz was simply involved, but he wasn't a major culprit. And yet the rest of that story has been covered up. You can read it in the book, The Ultimate Evil by Maury Torrey. This is not what we're going to talk about, because this is far more prevalent than most people have any concept. And, of course, what it really wants is destruction and death and horror, and that's what we're going to see in this coming war. That's the tragedy. All of these wars, I believe, of course, are satanic in their origins.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And when you have these groups, and the way it works, like the OTO, in Crowley's autobiography, he makes the statement that he was recruited, or excuse me, it's from the writings of Kenneth Grant. It's not from his autobiography. It's from Aleister Crowley and The Hidden God, but Kenneth Grant. But in this book, he makes the statement that while he was in Freemasonry, that he was watched for several years by two men. One was Theodore Roos, and the other was Karl Kellner, two German Freemasons that founded the Ordo Templar Orientis. And he was invited into the OTO from Freemasonry. Now, the OTO is not officially a Masonic organization, but they were founded by Freemasons, and they recruit out of the Masonic Lodge. And why do they do this? They do this because within Freemasonry, like you've already alluded to this, that when you go into Freemasonry, you swear an oath not to tell what goes on within Lodge property. And when you're in the Lodge, let's say that I'm a Satanist, and I'm wanting to recruit some people into my particular group, I can look at people, I can size them up, and if I think that they might be game for some bizarre kicks, I could invite them to one of my little shindigs. And if they don't want to come, what are they going to do? They cannot go out and say, well, yeah, down at the Lodge Hall Wednesday night, he invited me to a ritual. Because this is just not done in Freemasonry. That's what it's all about. It's the carnal man's dream. You can walk through these doors, and whatever you do, no one's going to tell about it. And this is why that Freemasonry is such a breeding ground of evil. We have an article from the Dallas newspaper about a Italian prosecutor that was trying to prosecute lodges in Italy, which are notorious for revolution, for actually laundering for the selling of missiles and nuclear material and bombs and all kinds of things. So, you know, this is nothing new, and this is what these groups have done, and that's why you see such connections with groups like the OTO, Golden Dawn, Ku Klux Klan, the Church of the Final Process. These are how these groups operate, and that's why they're so successful, and they're almost impossible to infiltrate. And this is what Berkowitz was a part of. And, you know, when you get in groups like this, you almost begin to believe that you're invincible. And this is what Berkowitz evidently came to believe, and he was obviously manipulated and controlled by other people that were doing what they were doing for some specific reasons. And just like in the Scottish Rite has changed so much. You've got the the degrees of black masonry that these rituals are gained or are geared toward murder, revenge, and all kinds of dark things. But today, a Scottish Rite Mason, in a weekend, they can watch films and they can go from the fourth degree to the 32nd in a weekend by watching films. And now, even in one day, they can go through the degrees. Now, in the old days, every degree would be acted out and every initiation taken. And I think in Europe, that's still pretty much the case. But because lodge membership is down, they'll run them through in a day. And a lot of these guys, I know I've heard guys say that they were drunk when they watched the films and they didn't know what it's about. So now, more than ever, people in Scottish Rite Masonry are not aware of what they're supporting. But yet, then again, you've got the old war horses that have been running the agenda for a long time within that 33rd degree, that they're pushing this agenda forward.
And, of course, the thing is that they need the cover of these younger people coming into the lodge, you know, accepted members of the community, many of them successful. And, of course, you know, they come in because they want the contacts and they want the power and the association, you know, and the support of fellow members of the lodge, having no idea they're being used as a cover for these horrible things that go on behind the scenes. Right now, let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. So what is the advantage of having a 32nd degree Mason that really doesn't know what's going on?
Well, he is a very, very good cover for the people who do know what's going on. I've talked to a 32nd degree Mason, and it was really very interesting. He said he'd been a 32nd degree Mason for 3 or 4 years before he started reading the Bible and suddenly realized that Masonry and the Bible were incompatible. And he had renounced his affiliation with the lodge. But when I asked him to come onto our program, he was afraid to.
But what are they really after by pumping guys through so fast?
Well, why don't you answer that, David, and then I'll tell what I think. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, what they're basically after is just to keep that basic grassroots support system there. It's money. It's financial. And the membership of the lodge has fallen out. You know, the superstructure is very much intact. The power is there. But the number of Masons that are joining Blue Lodge and entering Scottish Rite, it is down. They are just trying to pump up the membership. And, you know, they're just trying to keep that support base up. That's just basically, simplistically, what it is.
And I really think that they also want them as a cover. I mean, you've got a lot of people in the community who are Masons. You know, people are going to say, look, I know Sam. He's a great guy. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Masonry.
Sure.
As long as Sam is there. But poor old Sam doesn't realize he's being used as a cover for these satanic activities.
Well, if they get the guy to the 32nd degree, do they feel like they've got him locked in then, so he'll stay,
some of them are getting an awful lot of people have left Masonry right now. They're sort of hoping they won't stay, or at least that they won't come out and publicly talk about it. I will tell you that most people, after they've sworn these horrible oaths, are really afraid to talk about it. Most of them will not come forward and say, this is what the oath was. Because when you've taken that oath, you live in constant fear that they will fulfill the promise of slitting your throat and tearing out your heart and tearing out your intestines. And if you don't know what those oaths are, read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. They'll curdle your blood.
Well, maybe Freemasonry is getting a bad name on account of you.
Well, it's by David, not because of me, but because of people like David
and
some of the others. My guest, right.
Your radio program.
Oh, right.
Well, anyhow, what I called about was I wondered if I could ask your guest if he's run across the name John Engels in any of his studies of the occult.
John Engels?
Engels.
A-N-G-L-E-S?
E-N-G-L-E-S, as in Karl Marx.
Okay.
Oh, Marx and Engels, sure.
No, that was Frederick Engels, though.
Oh, excuse me.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sure. Uh-huh. Oh, absolutely.
Can you talk about that?
Well, there's a book out by a man by the name of Richard Wurmbrand that talked about Karl Marx actually being a Satanist. And Marx was pretty much a dupe of Engels. Engels was the guy that pulled the strings.
That's why I'm asking about Engels. Yeah.
Behind Karl Marx, yes.
Marx was a puppet.
Yeah, Marx was just basically a puppet, And he was just manipulated by Ingalls, who was a very powerful man, very powerful Freemason. Of course, this was all done for a purpose. But, yes, absolutely.
In fact, remember, they were financed by a secret society known as something of Just Men, the Society of Just Men. You'll find that in the 1911 British Encyclopedia, and then, of course, that fact has been subsequently removed from subsequent editions of the encyclopedia because they've simply rewritten history. But it was the Society of the Just, or the Society of the Just, that actually financed much of Karl Marx's work. We're going to have to take a break here, Mike. We're going to be about 10 minutes. It would be probably easier to call back.
Okay.
And so Mike will call back here in just a few minutes. We'll be right back with our special guest this evening, David Carrico. And if you'd like to know more about this book, The Egyptian Masonic Satanic Connection, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our special guest this evening is David Carrico, and, of course, his book is The Egyptian Masonic Connection. And, of course, you know, the amazing thing with the story of David Berkowitz and the Son of Sam murders, how they've been able to conceal this whole story from the American people. Berkowitz eventually converted to Christianity, and he's a Christian. He's in prison. He has never asked to be released. He realized he's sinned against God and against man. But his story, other than Maury Terry's revelation about it, really has not gotten the play that it should have, because I think it would make many people aware of the fact that this is simply one of literally hundreds of examples of these secret satanic groups and societies operating openly in America with the full coverage of people in the police force and in the highest positions of our court system. David?
Yes, sir.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it is certainly right. And the cover-up in the media is just so effective that the average person, if they don't look beyond what they're hearing on television and seeing in the newspapers, and if they don't intelligently interpret the facts that slip through, they're going to miss this. And this goes back to a basic understanding of conspiratorial history, that the world events, this war that we're about to be plunged into, that this just isn't by accident. You know, these are part of a plan and a scheme that is going to result in a one-world government and a one-world religion, and these groups are a part of this giant octopus that is bringing this monster about. And these are kind of like, one person likened these, a person in this group said to me that they are the foot soldiers of the New World Order. And a lot of people that are pro-New World Order, and by the way, one of the messages that I would call a hate mail from a Mason, he said, by the way, I'm pro-New World Order. And he was very proud of it. And a lot of people think that we're going to take a quantum leap and everything is going to be warm and fuzzy and we're going to come into this higher realm of consciousness and save the planet and all of this, but it's not going to happen that way. But a lot of these guys are a lot more realistic. They know that people are going to have to die. They're going to have to kill people, that some people are not going to shut up. They've got prison camps already set up for these people right here in America, and that this thing is going
to
come down.
We're going to have to interrupt you back in just a moment here. Well, of course, what David is saying, the prison camps in America, well, that could never be true. What do you mean it couldn't be true? Of course. What do you think they're doing with a lot of these old army bases that they've set up? They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know what they're doing. And well, this is the time we're going to have to take a brief break, and I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we certainly welcome your support from out across America. If you know there's a problem and you'd like to become part of our effort, a part of the Radio Liberty family, as we reach out across America on the Internet, on shortwave, on satellite, and radio stations, and we have about 50 stations that every week hear some of our programming. I wish for a lot more. Our weekend programming is heard, though, on 34 or 35 stations, and at least the word is getting out to some people. And then, of course, certainly by the miracle of the Internet, and our Internet audience is growing, our shortwave audience is growing, because people are telling people who are telling people. And but we've got a long way to go before there are enough people who really understand what's going on. And, of course, our next move, and you'll notice we've changed the music. I get a lot of emails from people who say they don't like the music, and I wish we could have the old music. I mean, you can find me copies of America the Beautiful that were actually pressed before 1972. I will go ahead and put them on, but there are new draconian federal laws that prohibit us from using more recent net music on the Internet. So, and then, of course, you notice we're having the breaks. Well, this is in preparation so that we'll be ready when the time comes to actually syndicate this program. We hope to be syndicating our afternoon program and trying to get other stations to pull it down. And when this takes place, well, I will be asking you to go to your station, or maybe even to help finance local stations across America where we can get these information out. Because when people hear the truth, the first couple of times they think it's crazy. After a little while, they're afraid that it's not. And when they begin to see the overall picture and have done some reading, then they begin to understand this spiritual battle in which we're engaged. And we need your help, quite frankly, to continue doing what we're doing. So we hope many of you will decide you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, we certainly hope that you'll tell others about our programs. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, our January letter just went out, and just listening to David as he talks about the reason for this war, bringing about the New World Order, it's almost like he had read my letter ahead of time, which, of course, he hasn't. But, of course, he understands what's going on because, of course, he's on the front lines of this battle. And so we certainly hope that if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, just call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'll be glad to get that to you. We're going to have to say goodbye to our listeners up there in the Great Northwest. And, of course, we'll be back with you again on Monday. And until then, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers, but we ask you to please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be with you again, Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And right now, of course, our special guest this evening is David Carrico. We're talking about his book, The Egyptian Masonic Satanic Connection. It's a very important book. It will give you tremendous insight into how this whole sequence of the mystery religions, beginning with Nimrod, who was the first master mason, at least according to Masonic lore, and then, of course, the secret societies persisting, continuity of the mystery ever since that time. But what is the mystery all about? Why, the mystery, of course, is Satan is God. Well, right now, let's go to Mike, who's calling back. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to know the detail on the documentation for Frederick Engels. Where can I find that? I think you mentioned it before.
It's a book called Marx and Satan by Reverend Wormbrand. And if you'd like more information, you might call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That really goes into Marx more than Engels, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I just want to say to David, I really enjoyed his video, the Satanic Ritual Abuse in Secret Societies.
Well, let's tell our listeners how they can get that video. How can they get hold of you, David, and get a copy of that?
All right. We have a toll-free number that after this we're off the air, they can call. It's 866-200-9682. Or you can email us, or you can go to our website, and also on our website we have a lot of testimonies of ritual abuse survivors that we have put on that people can read, the actual stories of people that claim they have experienced this.
Now, first of all, let's get that telephone number one more time.
Okay, 866-200-9682.
All right, that's 866-200-9682. What is your website?
Our website is www.ritualabusefree.org. Or you can email us at ritualabusefree@cs.com. And I appreciate the good comment on that video. And the video was done after we did the book. And it was done in studio. It's not a lot of our videos are like conference lectures. This was a very highly documented video that has a lot of documentation into it that goes even a step beyond what we go in the book. And we've had a lot of good reports for it. And we appreciate the good comment from your listener.
Okay, anything else, Mike?
Well, yeah, one more. room 322 at the Skull and Bones. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, the Skull and Bones. We have a chapter on the Skull and Bones in another book carried for Radio Liberty, The Great Seal of the United States. And the Skull and Bones is very much a part of this conspiracy. And of course, we have people like that are very much coming to the surface, like John Kerry, Tony Blair, our president that are members of the Skull and Bones, and these people are players at the very highest level in this conspiracy.
And does it,
they're in it up to their eyeballs.
Does it include information on Room 322? And also, is there any connection between that number and Genesis 322?
I'm not sure about that, but I know that the number 322 was connected with Skull and Bones, and that people like Anthony Sutton, who have studied Skull and Bones, have connected this with the original Illuminati.
Yeah.
But as far as I'm not familiar with the actual, what you're talking of, Room 22 and Genesis 322.
Mike, many people feel, and I have always felt, that this was related to Genesis 322. According to Alexandra Robbins in her book, this was basically... it was formed in 1832, and it was the second chapter. That's why 322. It was the second chapter of the Skull and Bones. One in Germany, one over here. I don't know whether that's true or not.
I'm convinced that she's a disinformation source.
Well, you may be right. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
A lot.
Okay, let's go to Bill, calling from Coeur d'Alene. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I had two quick questions, but first, before I ask them real fast, the phone number was 866...
209-682.
Okay.
My
second question is going to focus on Benjamin Krim and this Lord Maitreya, but first, quickly, I wanted to ask, when Clinton was inaugurated, I saw a picture of him doing a specific sign with his hand to someone who was obviously in the front row or what have you. And I've heard rumors that basically in major speeches, all Bush and the others have all made that same hand signal at a certain time, and it's the raised index and small finger with the hand closed.
You're talking about, of course, the sign of the goat?
Well,
I've never seen that so myself.
It's basically a closed hand with just the index finger and the small finger raised up in the air.
Well, all right. Do you know anything at all about that one specific symbol that he's describing, David?
No, I really couldn't comment without seeing that.
All right.
I know that.
Okay. My second one is a show that I do not listen to, but on a fluke I did catch was... interview on a late night show that's nationwide, 3-hour interview with Benjamin Krim, and it was about as satanic as anything, and it basically focused on him and Lord Maitreya, and there were accusations during the course of the program that was basically that he was a Satanist and he was promoting that.
Well, what did he say in the response to the fact of being a
Satanist? Well, he denied it and said that he's here for good, and I taped the show. It's very disturbing to hear it.
Well, of course, you ought to read his things. I take his magazine called Share Magazine, and of course, I will tell you, we have some movies of him, and at one point it looks like he came right out of the pit of hell.
Well, he seems to put a nice sugar coating on it, but when you read between the lines of what he says and the supposed unseen figure of Lord Maitreya that has been around since way before Christ, who has materialized and appears in various places but happens to live in London, and he conjures a spirit up at these seminars that he has in New York or San Francisco or what have you. But I was just wondering if you or your guest had a comment on that particular avenue of the satanic movement.
David, what do you know anything about Lord Maitreya?
Well, Benjamin Krim has ties with Lucius Trust, and he's very much a part of this thing, and he's working at the conspiracy from the religious angle, the bringing in of the one world religion, and people like Mr. Krim, they are establishing a religious philosophy that is being propagated by the UN, the New Agers, and even the Catholic Church, that is going to allow all religions to live under the same umbrella of this philosophy, which is just basically Luciferian. And I remember in Krim's book, which he wrote back in the 80s, he said that the initiation into this one-world religion were going to take place in Christian churches and Masonic lodge halls.
And if you haven't seen the amazing clips, Bill, you really ought to think about getting them. It's one of the best things going into the whole religious aspects of this whole satanic conspiracy.
This is David Wigner's project?
Yeah, amazing clips.
I've seen that, but I do, I am interested in possibly some of these films that you may have of Krim's conferences. I would almost... I'd almost be scared almost to go to one of those.
Right. Well, I would just assume if you do go to one of them, all you have to do is pray and you'll totally disrupt everything. Constance Comby tells about going to see him and sitting in the front row and praying, and he couldn't accomplish anything. She totally discombobulated him. Okay. Hey, we've got to go on. Thanks so much, Bill. So our guest is David Carrico, and we're talking about his book and this world satanic conspiracy, but its influence right here at the upper echelons of our government. Certainly, you know about the Franklin cover-up, John DeCamp's talk about the pedophile ring operating out of the Midwest, but going right into the very heart of our nation's capital.
Absolutely, and we did a radio show with Mr. DeCamp, and I don't know, he talked with us. He didn't go into it in his book, but he talked with us on the radio show we did with him, that there were definitely Masonic connections in the Franklin cover-up.
And of course, I have a very close friend who was going to write a book. She had all of the documentation on the Witches' Coven that was operating in the White House during the Clinton years. And you could imagine, of course, who led that coven, probably the same person who invited Gene Houston to come to the White House to conjure up the spirits of Eleanor Roosevelt and Mahatma Gandhi. But of course, my friend was told by someone she knew that if she wrote that article about the Witches' Coven in the White House during the Clinton years, that she would, of course, be killed, as would her family, and so she backed away from it. Could such things be going on in America today? Yes, they could be going on. And the fact you're not hearing about it simply shows how effective the control of the media really is.
Yes. And in that same time period, when Gene Houston was there in the Clinton years, they also had a fella by the name of Jeddu Krishnamurti, who was actually the fella that was touted as the Antichrist by the Theosophists back in the days of Leadbeater and Besant. As a young boy, they were planning to bring him to America to be the new powerful occult messiah, which didn't work out. He kind of lost his juice when he got here. But I can also verify what you've alluded to of these people just not being as powerful when they're actually confronted. My wife and I attended a Gnostic Mass here in Evansville, which is a very dark thing. And I called them up, and I was pumping them for a little information, and they said, you know, well, we're broad enough to accept any and all religions. And I said, well, I believe that Jesus Christ is the only way of salvation. Can you accept me? And of course, they already had their foot in the mouth, and they said yes. And I told them I would like to attend and just observe. And we did that. We just went and we observed and we prayed, and they were so obviously flustered. I mean, we bothered them so bad that we found out, well, boy, these big, powerful guys, they couldn't hardly go through their little hooky-poo with us there.
It was
an eye-opener.
I think that one of the things that we as Christians don't understand is that if we really are washed in the blood of Christ, we do have power. Not our own power, of course, but the power of our Lord. And you come under demonic obsession. You have to, call upon, the Lord for help, but you can order the demons to leave you alone, and they will. They have to obey. That's the way the laws are laid out, or the rules are laid out, and I don't understand how it works. But I do know that it works.
Right. And we are basically here at Followers of Jesus Christ, we are an organization of three, me and my wife and our cat. And here in Evansville, we've got a lot of good friends, such as yourself, all over the country that we work with. But basically, we're an organization of three. We're here, we live in a house trailer in Evansville, Indiana, and we've been fighting this thing for many years, and we've seen tremendous fruit from it. And I say that to say this, that when a person makes their mind up that they're going to take a stand and they're going to get in the devil's face, there's just no telling what they can accomplish. So we are on the right side. It might look like these guys, and they do have all the worldly power and influence, but I wouldn't be on their side for nothing, because God Almighty is going to take these people down.
Amen. I mean, it's going to be a tough time. I believe we're going to have a terrible, terrible, tough time, because I think that God is going to bring judgment on America.
Oh, yes.
And I think that this is the only way to get the attention of the good people in this country who've been put to sleep by the ministers who are just not preaching, not telling them about these things, or afraid to talk about these things. So they talk about all sorts of mushy and unimportant things. And not that the gospel and not that the word of God is unimportant, because the word of God is important. But a lot of the times they're simply taking one or two verses to justify a whole talk on how to get along with your wife, or how to get along with your kids, or how to get along with your husband, or how to get ahead in the world, or how to utilize certain promises from Malachi to get more money. Because if
healthy,
you give more money to the church,
progress.
Why, you're going to get a lot of money. Yeah. And I don't believe God necessarily works that way.
And all of these prophecies that, you're going to move to Cleveland and marry a blonde, and it's just so ridiculous.
Your wife probably wouldn't appreciate that.
No, she wouldn't. Silent pulpits in America are a condemnation of the apostasy that is rampant in our nation.
Amen to that. Well, Mike, you're back again.
I'm back again. Regarding taking a stand and getting in the devil's face, I heard the story told regarding J. Krishnamurti. And this is from Rich Harvey, about 15 years ago. He told the story that Krishnamurti was on his boat, on his way here to the United States.
From India. He was over in India. He was going to be the leader of this whole movement.
Yeah. And apparently there were quite a number of Christians who were aware of what was going on, that he was on his way. I don't know the details on that, how they were aware, etc. But they prayed, and they prayed, and they prayed. And Krishnamurti lost his will to do what he was coming to do. And he decided that he was not the one, and he went back.
Okay, I think that's a fascinating story, and I've heard that same story as well.
Mm. Yes, okay. And I don't know, and the way I have read the story, I don't know if it was so much the fact that people knew he was coming and were specifically praying against him, but at that time in America, which I think that was probably about
1920, but
somewhere in that in the immediately post World War I era, where there was still at that time a strong enough Christian influence in our country that he was not able to manifest these demonic spirits. But if you can just think from 1920 until our time now, how Christianity has been ransacked by these occult groups and the media, that now the influence of the church is almost null and void. The church is no longer salt and light. The salt and light is coming from shortwave radio programs you're hearing in the middle of the night. The salt and the light is not coming out of the pulpits. So these people are being able to manifest more and more of these demonic manifestations of power that the Bible tells us are going to be extremely profound in the Great Tribulation period.
Okay, Mike, anything else?
That's it, thanks. Well,
thank you, and I think that's fascinating, but certainly this is a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political and ideological and cultural and educational and economic battlefield, but as David is well aware, that's what the battle really is, simply as most people think, a battle between Republicans and Democrats, liberals or conservatives, right and left. Well, of course, you've got all sorts of fascinating things here, but really going into the background, let's talk a little bit about Crowley, because Crowley is certainly one of the pivotal figures. He had a profound influence on another man who changed America. If we were going to say one man changed the sexual mores of America, it was Alfred Kinsey.
Yes.
But Alfred Kinsey was a disciple of Crowley, and if you read Judith Rieschman's book, Kinsey, Crime and Consequences, you'll see a picture of Kinsey standing in this shrine to Crowley, and it's obviously a stage picture there, and before a picture of his mentor, Aleister Crowley, the Beast, 666, or who called himself the most evil man in the world. And yet, of course, Kinsey changed the laws and morality of this country can be directly traced to Kinsey, and our courts and our lawyers and our Supreme Court used Kinsey's fraudulent and perverse pseudoscience to undermine the basic moral foundation of our society. We'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest, David Carrico. All right. Well, David, tell us a little bit about Aleister Crowley. You said earlier that, you know, he had been actually watched for a number of years, but he was a 33rd degree Mason. And then he was picked to go into the upper echelons of the Masonic movement to join the OTO. What is that? The Orientis, the Order.
Order of Templar Orientis.
And, of course, that then was truly a satanic organization, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And the basic, as we document, we've got an entire chapter on Aleister Crowley in our book. And on page 38 on our connection book, we have a picture of Aleister Crowley and all of his Masonic regalia. And at the side, there is the sigil of the Baphomet, as it's called, the Knights Templar Cross. And that's the sigil that he used when he signed his name. And it's interesting, if you ever see a picture of the Grand Commander of the Scottish Rite, he bears the same sigil on the top of the hat of the Grand Commander of the Scottish Rite. Just another one of those amazing coincidences. But there's a quote on page 37 of our book that is from Crowley's autobiography, and not only was he a 33rd degree Scottish Rite Freemason, but he also held the 95th degree in the Rite of Memphis and the 90th degree in the Mite of Mizraim. These were European rites that were based on the Egyptian mysteries and tremendously occult. And the quote that I really like from his autobiography, he makes the statement that if he would put on all of his Masonic medals and awards at one time, that it would be enough to make an elephant stumble. So Mr. Crowley was just not a Freemason, but he was a very decorated and honored Freemason worldwide. And when you're a 33rd degree Mason, and there's probably about 5,000 of them at any given time, that entitles you, they're called the Grand Inspectors Generals that make up that body of the 33rd degree, the Grand Inspectors Generals, and that enables them to visit any Masonic group anywhere in the world. And during the time, and what's amazing, what we need to understand, is that during the time that Crowley was receiving all of these Masonic awards, he was being blasted in British newspapers and all over the world as doing these bizarre rituals. And, I mean, he was a known Satanist, publicized as the most wicked man in the world. So there's just no dismissing this as just something that the Masons didn't know what kind of guy Mr. Crowley really was.
Well, didn't he actually write that the ceremony you would get the most power from was the murder of a child, a sacrifice of a child?
Yes, and we had that documentation on page 38 in our book, and it comes from a book that he wrote called Magic in Theory and Practice. And it is so disgusting that it's even hard to talk about a lot of these things.
But, of course, imagine now, here's the man that Kinsey literally deified, who is one of the leaders of Masonry, talking about how the sacrifice, the way to get the maximum power was through the sacrifice of an infant. And that's actually why he was driven and forced to leave Italy, because of the belief that he was involved in infant sacrifice.
Yes, and there was actually, when it was Mussolini that actually deported. And, you know, Mussolini was no saint. And Mussolini threw Crowley out of Italy. And he had in Italy what he called the Abbey of Thelema, which was just basically a house out in the country, a big party and ritual house. And one night, a young girl was leaving Crowley's house after one of these rituals, and she didn't make it back into town, and she actually died and fell into a ditch trying to walk back into town. And it was after this incident that Mussolini deported Crowley from Italy, and he came to Pasadena, California in 1944. And in Pasadena, California, in 44, he founded the first OTO chapter in America. And actually, and Maury Terry made this statement in The Ultimate Evil, that it is from that date that the study of serious occult crime in America actually begins. It begins in 1944 in Pasadena, California.
Well, you know, there's a wonderful book, and I'm sure you're probably well aware of it, called Painted Black. It's written by a professor
at
Colorado. Uh-huh. And he goes into all the satanic ritual abuse. Well, of course, the FBI was supposed to investigate this, but the man of the FBI in charge of this did everything he could to cover this up. That was his job, was to belittle and, of course, to, demonize and vilify and ridicule anybody who talked about satanic ritual crimes in America. Now, some of the police forces would actually have teams that would actually study this and, were expert on satanic ritual abuse. But the purpose of your Federal Bureau of Investigation under John Edgar Hoover, who incidentally just happened to be a 33rd degree Mason, was to conceal this fact from the American people, just as for so many years they concealed the fact that there was a mafia, a Casa Nostra here, a mafia family. J. Edgar Hoover knew that, but of course he was a homosexual, and he was a Mason, and he went right along with what was going on. And of course, if you read the new book we're carrying now, Redecide, he knew who killed Kennedy too, but he covered that up. But he was, of course, created by the media. Why? Because he was a Mason and because he was homosexual, so they always gave him good coverage.
Yes, and the person you're alluding to is Ken Lanning, who is the head out of Quantico, the big instructor on. He sets the tone on the philosophy of the occult crime investigations, and he has basically taken the stance that occult crime in America doesn't exist.
It's sort of like the CDC that says there is no such thing as Gulf War syndrome, or there is no such thing as chronic fatigue syndrome.
Yeah.
The purpose of these people is not to reveal, but to conceal the new diseases that have been created, and of course in the instance of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, to conceal the fact that satanic crime is rampant in America.
Yeah.
In fact, in your book, you tell a little bit about how they dispose of the bodies and how they brag about how they dispose of the bodies. All these children that are disappearing across America and are never found.
Yeah.
You know, and nobody ever asks how many of these are victims of satanic abuse. I'll never forget hearing or seeing Antoine LaVey's daughter on a television program. And there she's dressed in black with her boyfriend dressed in black. They're saying, why, if all these satanic sacrifices are taking place, where are the bodies? You show us the bodies. And she's grinning like a Cheshire cat because she knows that nobody's ever going to find the bodies after they've first been ground up.
Right. Yeah, and I know personally that a friend of ours attended a seminar where Mr. Lanning was speaking and personally handed Mr. Lanning a copy of our book. So I know he's got it. I hope he's read it. And in our video of Satanic Ritual Abuse and Secret Societies, we have a quote from Mr. Lanning. And in this quote, he actually places the blame upon the children, that the children are at blame for being provocative and seducing people that molest them. Now, I tell you what, just get me going and talk about this guy. And this is the most nonsensical position to say, well, occult crime doesn't exist. And in Evansville, Indiana, when this began to break in the newspapers, And it also got some national publicity from Current Affair, and the Chicago Tribune did an article. But the Evansville Police Department took the same position. There is no occult crime and Satanism in Evansville, Indiana.
And didn't you say that the head of the police department was a Mason?
Yeah, the chief of police was right. a third degree Mason. Since that time, he was arrested for embezzling money. So, you know, on and on you go. Spin, spin, spin.
And I think that, ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand these are not imaginary things. These are very real things. There's a great deal written about it. But, of course, you're not going to see a lot of this discussed. Occasionally you will. But our purpose is to show you this infiltrates every aspect of our society, but could not exist without friends in very powerful places in Washington, D.C. And, of course, the one thing is they cannot allow the American people to know the truth about the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and if you're out there in the listening audience, we hope some of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. But our special guest this evening, of course, is David Carrico, and of course his book is The Egyptian Masonic Satanic Connection. If you're out in the listening audience and you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I know David certainly would be able to answer your question. He's on the front lines of this battle. That book we were talking about, Painted Black, by a professor at, I believe he's in Colorado.
University of Denver,
right. I spent a great deal of time researching this. Incidentally, is he available? Do you have any idea how I could get hold of him? I'd love to do an interview with him.
Well, he was doing some seminars. I haven't heard of anything he's done recently, but he was doing speaking in seminars. And this book that is just an excellent book, and I'm afraid to say I think it is out of print.
It
now.
Is out of print, as far as I can tell.
But this, what we're saying, if anyone cares to take the time to do the research, the documentation is so solid that it is absolutely irrefutable. You will convince yourself if you take the time to look into it, because it's solid as a rock. I don't have a shred of doubt in my mind, not one bit.
And then there's a Ted Gunderson, who certainly worked with the FBI for many years, and he's written extensively about these satanic pedophile rings that are working here in the United States, reaching into the highest echelons of our government. Have you run into Ted at all?
Ted has been a speaker at our conference before. Yes, I know Ted. And a lot of the work he's done with the McMartin case, which was just another case of the cover-up of the facts. And absolutely, we're certainly not the only people that have brought this forward. But it's far too many people. And if, you know, the sad thing about this thing should have gotten national publicity in many instances of these things that are going on, and it has been suppressed by the media. And people in America, they think, well, we're not hearing about on this on the news, that, boy, this can't be true. But like in Evansville, Indiana, in our case that we wrote a book about, the former prosecutor of Evansville was advocating on national television that these men needed to be investigated and prosecuted. Since that time, Mr. Welborn was found dead in his home with a gunshot to his head, an apparent suicide. The head of the psychology department at the university here in town was advocating on national television that these children had been abused and that they were all ritually marked. The prosecutor of Evansville, Indiana, said on national television that he didn't know where these children needed to go to for help, but it wasn't to the prosecutor's office. He didn't care what these people thought, that he was not going to prosecute these cases. end of the story.
Yeah, and of course, sort of like, well, Trent Lott, who you know, recently was relieved as Speaker of the Senate. But Trent Lott, when they brought Bill Clinton into from the House of Representatives, the members of the House, which impeached the president, went to see Trent Lott, Speaker of the Senate, and said, you know, we've got all these charges against the president. It's going to take us 3 months to present our case. And Trent Lott said, no, no, you're not. You're not going to get a chance. We're going to give you 3 days. You can present three witnesses, and we're not going to let you dump this on us. We're not going to let you bring this out. Now, why would he say that? Well, because Trent Lott was a 33rd degree Mason, and Bill Clinton was the highest ranking demolé in the country. He had never been a member of the Masons, but he was a member of the demolés, and he was the highest ranking demolé. Who are the demolés? Why, they're the sons of members of the Masonic movement. And of course, Jacques Demolé was a Luciferian who was burned at the stake back in the 1300s. And the fact that most Americans don't know that, it simply reflects the fact that they're not being told the truth about what this is all about. In fact, I've never heard anybody mention what really happened there. David Chippers wrote a wonderful book called Sellout, suggesting that Trent Lott had sold out the members of the 10 people in the House who'd had the courage to impeach the president. But you have to understand, there's always been a very, very powerful force behind Bill Clinton. I mean, he wasn't the selection of the American people. He was picked by the ruling cult elite to lead America towards the New World Order and the New World Religion. Now, what's the relationship between this whole world satanic movement and this move towards a New World Order?
But between the satanic religion?
Yeah. What is there any relationship between this satanic religion and the idea of creating a world government that George Herbert Walker Bush talked about on September 11th of the year 2000?
Yes, absolutely there is. And just like we alluded to, that within the Masonic concept of God, the Luciferian concept, which is the concept of God that was taught in the mysteries, that there is this potential for great good, and there's also the potential for great evil. And in the New Age, and the Bible tells us we're going to have a one-world government and we're going to have a one-world religion. And the one-world religion, the Bible tells us in Revelation 13 through 17, is going to push this political leader into power. And within, you can look at the New Age groups, and a lot of them, they're, you got your ecology groups, Save the Environment, and a lot of them are, you know, like these little fluffy New Age groups. But then you have these dark groups also. And I know one thing really stuck with me, that we had a man that came to Christ that was involved in Aryan Nation and through our ministry. And he told us that the way they looked at themselves was they were the foot soldiers of the New World Order. And I believe that a lot of these groups that people like, sad to say, you and I, we're not going to shut up, and there's others out there. We're not going to cave into this New World Order. Something is going to have to be done with these people. And a lot of these people are going to be like the black shirts of Adolf Hitler, that they are going to willingly be the people that head up a lot of these murders and executions. They're kind of the dark side of that religious expression of that Lucifer.
Well, you know, first, one only has to look into the background of the murder of President Kennedy, and there's no question, especially with this new book we carry called Regicide, based upon the papers of Robert Crowley, who was Deputy Director of Covert Operations for the CIA. The CIA killed the president. But
yep. They
not only killed the president, they killed 100 other people who knew something about it, and they had to be killed. Certainly, there were at least 50 to 80 people who did something or associated with Bill Clinton, and they all met violent and mysterious deaths. Certainly, was Ron Brown and, of course, the Vince Foster. But, you know, there were literally dozens and dozens and dozens of people. In fact, it said that Monica Lewinsky took a list of about 50 of these and put it on Linda Tripp's chair, saying, Linda, you don't really want to testify publicly about my affair with the president, do you? And the inference was that, you know, Linda could very well end up like all these other people who died. In fact, Lewinsky really, I think, was afraid for her own life, you know, once she began to realize what she was into. So, but where is the outcry from the people? You know, if the president has people killed, if you don't think the president has people killed today, I talked to L.D. Brown, who was actually recruited into the CIA through the offices of his good friend, William Jefferson Clinton. And L.D. Brown was to be an assassin. He was to kill a drug dealer in Mexico. And it turned out that the man he was to kill was not a drug dealer. It was Terry Reid, who had written a book about Bill Clinton and President Bush at that time, George Herbert Walker Bush. It was called Compromise. Sold 100,000 copies, and they were going to kill Terry Reid. The CIA had a contract out on his life. Well, I guess he was lucky. L.D. Brown, when he saw it was an American he was supposed to kill for the CIA, backed away. The story is told in The Secret Life of Bill Clinton by Ambrose Evans Pritchard. I've talked to L.D. Brown, asked him to come on the program. Whether he was bought off, whether he was given an offer he couldn't refuse, keep quiet, or, of course, you'll end up the same way as we wanted Terry Reid. And I don't know. He would not come on, but he certainly confirmed the story of the assassination, being hired as an assassin. Ladies and gentlemen, this is going on today. And you can only understand that by understanding that within the Central Intelligence Agency is this same a force of evil. It permeates every aspect of our society, and it permeates the media, and it permeates the church today, and that's why you never hear of it.
Yeah, and so many people, they really will, you know, when people start to talk about things like you and I have been talking about this evening, that, my goodness, you're just a bunch of conspiracy wackos. Well, if you can look, like, just say, for instance, the book and the video, The Clinton Chronicles, if you can look at the chain of deaths that surrounded Bill Clinton, and if you can dismiss that as just random chance and coincidence, that is what stretches the imagination. It stretches the imagination to believe that that's just all coincidence. And the only sane thing that an intelligent person conclusion they can come to is that these people most definitely are willing to commit murder or anything at all to justify their goals.
Well, let me tell you about the Clinton Chronicles, because, of course, I was put together by a good friend of mine, Pat Patriciano. And Pat, you know, was a, you know, he was a movie producer until I gave him a book and got him started on this whole conspiracy aspect of it. And out of that came his understanding of really what was going on. And so he put together the Clinton Chronicles. Well, the FBI then infiltrated his organization. Now, here's the FBI. We can't, of course, investigate anybody in America just because they're an Islamic terrorist. We can't do anything about that. But, of course, they had one man infiltrate his organization down in Mena, Arkansas, where he was investigating the drug episode there. They put other people into his office who actually disrupted his office and destroyed his files and all of his records. And, of course, the man who, his name was John Brown, who was an FBI informant, who actually Pat thought he was his friend, and Pat gave the fellow money and helped him. And John Brown told him who really killed the boys on the railway track, and actually got him to put forward the names of a couple of deputies down there in the MENA area. And Pat foolishly put those names into a video, and he ended up with a lawsuit that was really put together by the FBI to destroy him. That ended up destroying his marriage. It ended up, you know, bankrupting him. And this is what they do. He told me that they had a farm out in Hemet in California. On 10 different occasions, the black helicopters were there, hovering, watching, trying to intimidate. This is what happens to people in America today. Well, this is not imaginary. These are all things that I know personally from Pat, a wonderful man, a man who loves the Lord. But of course, they were able to totally disrupt and destroy his life.
Yes, and I know also we have a mutual friend that was very much involved in that, a man that is responsible for us being in the ministry we're in is Colonel Tom McKinney.
Oh, a wonderful, wonderful man who loves the Lord, and what a privilege it is to have him as a friend.
Yeah, and Tom was also sued over that and was very much a part of it. So, yeah, I mean, these things are not a figment of anybody's imagination. They are the cold, hard facts of what people need to wake up and deal with. And the role the CIA has played, and we can remember, we've got the skull and bones connection, and we can look back to Bush Sr., Papa Bush, and he was, and you know, he come across on TV as Mr. Cornpone, like from the Cornfield County, and, you know, talking about his country western music, you know, and this guy was the head of the CIA when this dark stuff was going down. So these people are very much in the know, and they're pulling the strings of what we're just rushing the Holocaust. America is being hyped into supporting this war that is just going to lead us down to the path of destruction and the establishment of this new world order. And it's just amazing how few people will take the time to really look. But it is encouraging because more and more we see people that are taking the time and that are getting informed.
Well, you know, of course, when you talk about Bush, we have the membership list of the Skull and Bones. We were able to get it from the daughter of a woman whose father and grandfather were both members of the Skull and Bones. So we have the list. There have been six or seven Bushes, members of this Bush family, tied to this occult pagan organization. And if you read between the lines of Alexander Robbins' wonderful book, The Secrets of the Tomb, and there's a lot of disinformation in there, but there's a lot of good information. I think Alexandra is a very nice person. I think she's very sincere, and I think that they manipulated her at every step of the way. But I also think that she put in some very valuable and important things in that story that if you read it and read it very carefully or hear my interviews with her, and incidentally that's in our four-tape set on the Skull and Bones, you'll actually understand the true pagan nature of this. And when I pointed out to her what she'd written and asked her where she considered concerned about these people wearing their black robes and black hoods and chanting these pagan ceremonies during a Skull and Bones wedding that somebody had witnessed that you described, and threatening people with their lives if they ever revealed anything that they'd seen, you know, she had to say, well, yes, I really was. Now, remember, this is a pagan organization. It's a godless organization. It stands for everything opposite of what America stands for. And Prescott Bush and the grandfather and George Herbert Walker Bush and now our president come from that organization. And they're thinking about running John Kerry from that organization.
Yeah.
The Skull and Bones, for many years, has been an integral part of the Central Intelligence Agency. There's a whole part of the CIA that is made up of bonesmen, these people from the dark side.
And, you know, today we can see the bonesmen pulling the strings, setting up this Gulf War. And you can just go back in history. You know, we talk about, you mentioned Prescott Bush in our book on the Great Seal, which you also carry. Back there, you can follow the money trail that actually financed Adolf Hitler.
Right
from the Brown Harriman Bank in New York, where Prescott Bush, our president's grandfather, was on the board. So these people are all about revolution. They're all about conspiracy. They are the people, even though some of these people are very visible, that there's this group behind these people. As Manly P. Hall has said, that the real, he said in so many words, that the real people that pull the strings, you know, you don't see them. They're back in the back. And these people are the front men that are, they're pushing forth an agenda. And like we've said over and over this evening, it is that agenda of these ancient secret societies that one day we're going to have what they conceive of as this utopian one world order, one world religion that was the goal of Nimrod and Babylon. But when they get it, they're going to have to realize that it's not going to be a utopia. It's going to be the devil's nightmare. And it's going to come to a horrible, horrible end when our Lord comes back and brings judgment upon this apostate system.
Well, you know, the thing is, David, as I read the scriptures, we're told there's going to be a great apostasy in the latter days. a great falling away. And there are all these people who think that they're Christians. My goodness, they go to church and they even have prayer sessions or Bible study. But they're studying a false gospel. They're following a false God. They've been lied to for so long. They've lost complete sight of what Christianity is all about.
Yes. And, you know, and this, I believe, is one of the biggest myths that is being propagated by the media, that our president is a Christian man. And the thing about it, you know, our president claims to be a Christian, but yet he has no problem praying with Muslims in the White House. He has no problem with after 9/11, we had the prayer meeting in Yankee Stadium where they had the great spiritual leaders. They had every kind of religious leader praying to these pagan gods. And our great spiritual leaders, we had Oprah Winfrey and Bette Midler. And I really believe at that event, after 9/11, America took a quantum leap from being a secular society to a pagan society.
And I think that's so important. Once we were a Christian society, and then we became an atheist society, but then there was another paradigm leap to a pagan society.
And I believe we're in that last stage. And now this idea that people that would put forth the idea that Christ is the only way of salvation, that, you know, this is just not even an intelligent position to be considered. And, of course, the man that is, and I believe this was all set up, the man that led our president to Jesus was Billy Graham, the man that now says all roads lead to God.
And if anybody doubts that, you really need to see the amazing clips, and you'll actually see Billy Graham saying, you don't have to be a Christian to go to heaven. Well, if that's true, then why are we sending missionaries out all over the world? Why are we spending our time trying to point people toward Jesus Christ? If everybody's going to get in, you don't have to be a Christian to get to heaven. Why would Billy Graham say something like that on television? Well, we're going to be back here in just a minute with our special guest this evening. We've got time for one or two more calls. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, of course, is David Carrico. We're talking about his book, The Egyptian Masonic A Satanic Connection, and of course he's written a book on the Great Seal. He's written a book on fraternities, college fraternities, which is a fascinating insight into another aspect of what's going on today. And you know, you've written several other books, haven't you, David?
Yes, we also have a book that is, a lot of people have said, is extremely helpful. It's called From Victims to Victors Through the Cross of Jesus Christ, and it's our healing guide and workbook for people that have been abused and are struggling with problems. And this is something also that we've had a lot of good reports about.
And again, let's get that telephone number out if people want to get in touch with you.
Our telephone number is toll-free, 866-200-9682. And we will be up. We're night owls, and you're welcome to call. And if you want to write us, you can write us at FOJC Ministries, Post Office Box 4174, Evansville, Indiana, 47724-4174.
All right, fine, and I hope our secretary has that down in case somebody needs it. Let's go one more time, the last time, to Mike. Mike, well, did you have one more comment?
If people want to believe that G.W. Bush, in office now, is a Christian, they also have to believe that Clinton was a Christian, simply because, well, more likely because, they saw him on the nightly news and CBS, etc. They saw him descending from the church steps with his Bible in hand, and so he must be a Christian. But George W. Bush is not a Christian.
No one, of course, you...
He does not follow our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Well, of course, I think we would judge a man by his actions, not necessarily by...
His actions and what he says and the way he goes. And Bill Clinton was very, very so far away from our Lord Jesus Christ, and so is George W.
All right, thanks so much, Mike. And right. So that's Mike. Mike's view is that our president is really not a Christian. So, well, only the Lord knows what's in his heart. All I can say is we would judge. We're told, judge not, lest you be judged by the judgment ye judge. In other words, we will be judged. If we are to judge others, we're going to be judged ourselves. And, of course, we're all going to be judged sooner or later. But I think that we can say that based upon some of the things that are happening now, there would at least be some question in our mind as to what is actually required. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we, of course, we're going to have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and, of course, we're dependent upon those of you out there in the audience who believe in what we're doing, who would like to help us as we try to expand our coverage across America. We have a coverage now. It's having an impact. It's reaching people. But, of course, I believe the time is relatively short. I think we have to reach as many people as we can in the time that God has given us. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. You can reach us there, and, of course, you can talk to the people and tell them what you'd like to do. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, why, we'd be glad to send you one. And as I mentioned earlier, it's almost talking to David. It's like he's read my newsletter ahead of time, but it's not that he's read it, but I think the same way as he does. He's been at this for studying it for a long, long time, recognizing the occult nature of the battle we're involved in. And anybody who understands what's going on thinks essentially the same way about what's transpiring. The purpose for this coming war is to promote the New World Order and the New World Religion. So if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, the number 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we hope many of you will go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And you'll tell others about our website. You can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet and, of course, not get anything accomplished. We don't want you to do that. We want you to spend your time getting educated and educating others. But a couple of hours a day, or you can listen up to three hours a day. We have amazingly many, many people do this. The programs are archived. You can pull them down and listen to them at your leisure. But help us to reach others. And people telling people telling people is the way we're reaching out across America. So again, remember our website. It's radioliberty.com. Remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. David, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, if I could, I'd like to give a little plug to our radio show.
Go ahead.
We've been doing a weekly hour-long show on WRMI 7.385. It's on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Central. We call it the Perilous Times Report, and we've just really been enjoying doing that and the response we've been getting. And
Now, is that a shortwave?
Yes, it's shortwave.
What is it again?
5.
What is it now?
It's called the Perilous Times Report.
But what's the W what?
WRMI.
Uh-huh.
It's 7.385 every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Central Time, the Perilous Times Report. And like I told you, we'd like to get you on there just as soon. They're getting set up on Christian Media Network to do interviews, and when that's in place, we certainly want to have you on to talk about your Brotherhood of Darkness book.
Well, we'd love to do it for you, and thank you so much, and thank you so much for everything you do, David.
God bless you, Dr.
God bless you, too. Good night.
Good night.
All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and hope you've enjoyed our marathon with David, but I think it's important that you hear somebody who really has a tremendous grasp of this, and I certainly think his book, it's a small book, and it's The Egyptian Masonic Satanic Connection, but it's packed full of the information that you need to understand what's going on in the world today. Because for those who do not recognize the spiritual nature of this battle, nothing makes sense. You can't understand the war that's coming down the line. But once you understand that it's simply a manifestation of this spiritual battle, why then, of course, it becomes very, very obvious. So we ask you, of course, to pray for our country. We ask you to pray for revival, because if this country doesn't turn back to God, God is going to turn his back on America forever. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but lastly, we ask you to remember to pray for our ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until it'll be Monday now, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
I took at the Masonic.
Are you going to be down tomorrow?
Yeah, I'll be there. Isn't that amazing about the trees?
About what?
Taking water up.
Oh, yeah, well, I thought that was really very, very interesting.
Yeah, really, what do you see? I don't know if you can see these very good. This is the guy that was only in third degree, but he worked for Jim.
Uh-huh.